Warning, this episode contains brain food that will lead to improved emotional and social intelligence. Thanks for tuning in to Harvesting Happiness today for a healthy serving of consciously prepared brain food. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen, your host. For more than 13 years, I've been handcrafting these sound ideas for better well-being. Each week, I love spotlighting diverse thinkers and doers who are contemporary trendsetters and change agents, devoting their lives to creating a better world in which to live. I invite you to listen up and change the way you think about human happiness. Our award-winning content is fresh, optimistic, and purpose-driven media that promotes well-being from the inside out. Alrighty then, let's dive in. This episode offers psychosocial education designed to inspire and motivate our listeners. The information provided does not constitute a therapeutic relationship nor a substitute for professional mental health care. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or for listeners in the United States, text 988 for the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining me on today's show, where we will be unveiling narcissism, navigating relationships with self-absorbed personalities. My guest today is Dr. Carol McBride. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist with more than 40 years' experience. She specializes in treating clients with dysfunctional family issues. Dr. McBride focuses her research, writing, and clinical practice on the topic of narcissism and its debilitating effects on relationships. She has treated many adult children of narcissistic parents in her private practice. She trains trainers around the world and has conducted several workshops for adult children with parental narcissism. Dr. McBride is the author of three books on the subject, including Will I Ever Be Good Enough? Will I Ever Be Free of You? And her latest, Will the Drama Ever End? And that's what we will be talking about today. Welcome back to the show, Dr. McBride.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I am always happy to talk about this subject with you because there are many narcissists amongst us, and we all need to learn how to recognize and navigate with these characters. Your newest book, the full title is Will the Drama Ever End? Untangling and Healing from the Harmful Effects of Parental Narcissism. Talk a little bit about why you wrote this third book.
Well, I have to kind of go back to the beginning when I wrote Will I Ever Be Good Enough? Healing the Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers. So I started in this process with women and mothers and daughters. And then that kind of led in my research and clinical work to so many of adult children of narcissistic parents ended up marrying narcissists and getting horrible divorces, which you and I have talked about before.
Yes, I'm grinning from ear to ear as you say this. It's like, yes, been there, done that.
Right. And then also as people work the recovery, my work has evolved into really trying to understand the dynamics of the family. If you grew up in a family that is led by a narcissistic parent, how does, you know, what are the dynamics of that family structure? And so that's where my research and clinical work have led me now to the third book.
And over 40 years, you have worked with children of narcissistic parents of all ages. You were telling me that right now the youngest is in her 20s or their 20s and the oldest in their 80s. And I find this fascinating because the through line, the thread of the story is similar regardless of age or generation.
Yes. It's so interesting because when we do our in-person workshops, which we're not currently doing, we may do again, but we would have people coming in from all over. We'd have someone in their 20s, someone in their 30s, someone in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. So it does really span the decades, yes, and the generations.
Let's take a look at the family structure. Mm-hmm. Because I'm curious, in your experience, is when there's a narcissistic family, is it one parent usually or both parents? What is the dynamic and what structure is then set up for the children?
Yes, very good question. Typically, we see the narcissistic parent married to an enabler who orbits around them. Then the children kind of showing up in roles in this family structure as the scapegoat child, the golden child, the lost child. And it's similar to what's written about the alcoholic family, except for the mascot clown is left out of this, in my view, because a mascot clown, everything's funny, trying to be the center of attention, takes the focus away from the narcissist. So, but basically, two things when I talk about the narcissistic family. What I mean is a family that is led by a narcissistic parent. Now, it could be two narcissistic parents. And the basic structure is one sentence that you can just think of, that the hierarchy is messed up because the parental needs take precedence over the children's needs.
I don't know if you've watched the series, The Bear, the TV series, because there is a scene in the second season of this series where there's a family dinner and the mother is a very narcissistic character played by Jamie Lee Curtis. And she just goes off and it is classic. It is funny. It is heartbreaking. It's scary. It's all the things that happen around the dinner table in that family structure.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think those of us who have been raised in that environment, like you immediately see it and you go, oh my God, there it is.
Yes. You see the dynamics play out.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Talk a little bit about how one would recognize the narcissistic parent, because oftentimes I think that because we rely on that parental figure as such a strong and central role in our lives that we don't even realize that that's what's been going on until many years later.
Yes, because as we're growing up, that's all we know. So that's normal to us. My clients tell me that they know as children that something is wrong, but they can't put their finger on it unless there's physical abuse, sexual abuse, more involved abuse. But as you know, emotional and psychological abuse is harder to pin down and put your finger on. But the children will feel that they will know that they're not being seen. They're not being heard. They're not being emotionally tuned into. They'll know that there's not empathy. You know, they may not be able to call it that, but they can feel that there's a lack of empathy. And as we were chatting about earlier, there are traits about narcissism that are annoying, but are ones that aren't as troublesome. You know, for instance, the boastful, arrogant, talk about myself, all about me, that kind of person, you know, you may want to stay away from. But the really damaging pieces of narcissism are they're very entitled. So they put themselves above everyone else. They expect favorable treatment always. The lack of empathy is just huge. The inability to emotionally tune into their children. Their exploitation, they exploit others to meet their own ends. And then a very weird dynamic that takes people in therapy a long time to really understand is their jealousy, like their jealousy of their children, which is such a bizarre concept if you're a parent out there, you know, because you typically we want everything for our children, you know, better.
Yes. Better than we had. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think what's sort of understood in the general public right now about narcissism isn't a full picture. Because when you hear people talk about narcissism, they think about the arrogant, boastful, all about me person. And it's much deeper and much more harmful, which is why I wrote this book, than that picture is.
Talk a little bit about the subtlety, because the person who is arrogant and boastful, you can sort of tap into it and recognize the narcissism, be avoidant of it if it, you know, you're not interested in it. But some of these other types are much more clever and subtle and manipulative and toxic in their approach, and they are unaware of their behaviors, which I find the most scary part of it.
It is scary. And part of that is because typically narcissists will act like they're and say they're very happy people and everything's wonderful and, you know, the perfect image of everything is so important to them. But they actually have a very fragile ego and are self-loathing. And so they end up projecting. They don't face and embrace and deal with their own feelings. So those things, those feelings get projected onto other people. And that's where a lot of times, if you're a partner of a narcissist or you're a child of a narcissist, you begin to realize that there are these things coming to you from out of the blue that you don't even know where they came from because they have nothing to do with you. They have everything to do with what's going on with the narcissist at the moment.
And the sense of having to gas off that those big feelings need to go somewhere because they can't be expressed in a healthy way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's very, very unsettling. Talk a little bit about in Will the Drama Ever End? What is the hope, the best hope that a child of a narcissistic parent can have about their own healing? I mean, I'm very hopeful that we can be healed. In your research and in working with your clients for decades, what's the trajectory of the path that you've witnessed?
Yes, I think it's so important for people to know that there's hope, there's recovery, that recovery is phenomenal. It takes time, though. And I think if I were to really want to let people know that, you know, this isn't the form of recovery that you just walk in and tell your story and you're done and you're better, you know, because you end up having PTSD, complex PTSD from growing up in this kind of dysfunctional family. So there's recovery work to do. But when it's done and the important aspects of it are done, you really are a different person.
It is the recovery work really in the realm of worthiness, self-esteem? Is it more about the reclamation of self than the healing the relationship with that parent? Because it may not be possible. Either they've passed or they're just so walled off, there's no way in to do the work with that person.
That's right, Lisa. And yeah, I always tell people our work is an inside job. It's not let's sit down and confront the parents or confront anybody. You know, it's all our own internal work. Yeah. So there are five steps in my five-step recovery model, and they all have to do with working with us and our trauma and our grief and our acceptance and working on our authentic self and reparenting ourselves.
I like that. It's the reparenting and the repairing that goes on, yeah. Right? That they go hand in hand. We are going to need to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue the conversation with my guest today, Dr. Carol McBride. We're talking about her latest book, Will the Drama Ever End? Untangling and Healing from the Harmful Effects of Parental Narcissism. To connect with Dr. Carol McBride, please do so at willieverbegoodenough.com, on Twitter at Carol McBride, on Facebook and Instagram. Those handles are Dr. Carol McBride. Here comes the pause. Hang on. Before we take that pause, I want to talk about stress and its impact on our health and well-being. We all know that just being alive causes stress, and sometimes the day-to-day craziness impacts our bodies. Think breakouts and thinning hairlines. Just like our skin, the condition of our hair reflects our overall health, and there are internal factors that can affect the way our hair looks, feels, and grows. And that's why I use and love Nutrafol. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. Take their 3-minute hair wellness quiz for a personalized plan that targets better hair growth. Learn what keeps you from reaching your hair potential by analyzing lifestyle, biology, hair history, and environmental triggers. Nutrafol has 5 formulas that are tailored to your hair's needs to help you achieve visibly thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair in 3 to 6 months. Each physician-formulated product is drug-free and made with high-quality ingredients that are recommended by more than 4,500 doctors and hairstylists nationwide. I've been using Nutrafol religiously for nearly 2 years. My hair is thicker and healthier because of Nutrafol, and the remarkable side benefits include better sleep, improved stress response, and a significant reduction in those pesky menopause symptoms, including hot flashes. No matter your lifestyle or stage of life, Nutrafol is a great solution that targets the root causes of thinning and supports hair growth from within. Simplify your self-care with easy online purchasing, no prescriptions or doctor visits required. Free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. Join me and more than 1 million others who are committed to keep growing with Nutrafol. Start your hair growth journey today by taking Nutrafol's hair wellness quiz and get your personalized hair plan today. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping at Nutrafol.com/quiz when you enter the promo code HARVESTING. Take the quiz and get started on reaching your hair wellness goals with Nutrafol today. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com/quiz, promo code HARVESTING. That's Nutrafol.com/quiz, promo code HARVESTING. Now let's take that brief pause. Each day, we have the intellectual freedom to be happy or the liberty to be miserable, regardless of external circumstance. If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, seek support, because good psychological health is vital in the achievement of a happy and satisfying life. Visit harvestinghappiness.com for psychosocial educational resources to boost emotional and social intelligence. Like what you hear on Harvesting Happiness? Sharing is caring. Pay it forward by spreading the word to your community and through social media. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. And we're back, continuing the conversation with my guest today, Dr. Carol McBride. We're talking about unveiling narcissism, navigating relationships with self-absorbed personalities. Let's get back to it. So, Dr. McBride, I am hopeful about the recovery. In the last segment, you talked about the inside work or the inside job that needs to take place, that we're never going to have that healing with the narcissistic parent. It's internal and incumbent upon us. Touch a little bit upon the reclamation process and then how the 5-step process that you've developed ties into this.
Sure. The 5-step recovery program that I've designed and work with clients with starts out with acceptance, which acceptance is very hard for people, because when I talk about acceptance, I mean accepting that there is a problem, that there is a disorder. And if people don't accept it, they can't go on to do the rest of the steps. And they keep wishing and hoping it'll be different. They keep going back to the empty well and you know, have more angst and pain and disappointment. So we start with acceptance, and then we move into trauma and, you know, how to unwind, how to process, how to work through that trauma. And that involves lots of talking about and feeling the feelings, you know, processing the childhood. Then we move into separation individuation, which is step 2. And that is really separating and individuating psychologically from the dysfunctional family. It doesn't mean, you know, you have to move away. Again, it's psychological, it's internal. But we separate from the dysfunction so that we can do step 3, which is now I get to work on who am I, you know, who is the man or woman that I'm truly meant to be, my authentic self, and kind of rebuilding the sense of self that didn't get to be celebrated and built in childhood. Because in the narcissistic family, you're taught to conscript to the mold of the family rather than encouraged to be your own person. So that's a big part of recovery, is step three. Step four is, now that I've gotten this far and I've processed all this, how am I going to deal with my family, my parents, my siblings, and how do I learn to set boundaries, and what sort of contact decisions do I want to make? And then the last step is basically, how is this impacting my life today? So the last step is what I call ending the legacy of distorted love, because we learned the wrong definition of love in the narcissistic family. So then we look at, now, how is this impacting my parenting with my own children, the friends that I'm choosing, the love relationships I'm choosing? And we end it with, are there any traits that we might have that we learned in the narcissistic family that we may want to work on ourselves, which is threatening at first to people, but it's very normal to have picked up some of that and to just open yourself up to, you know, working on it as your own reclaimed adult self, as you say.
Could you share a couple of stories from the book about clients?
Sure. One that I found really poignant that I put in the book, because the narcissistic family is so inconsistent and so unpredictable, because the child is constantly dealing with all those projections from the narcissist, I had a client tell me all I wanted was consistency. I just wanted consistency. And she said when she was 7 years old, she decided that she had to form her own consistency. So what she decided to do as this precious little girl was, every time she walked from the living room to the kitchen, she would blink her eyes. And in blinking her eyes, every time, she created one thing that would be consistent.
Wow.
And that just, it gives me goosebumps right now when I, you know, think about that story.
Yeah.
Another one that I found really poignant was a gaslighting story, where this was a woman talking about her husband who was a narcissist. And she said she was at home with the children, was later in the day, the laundry was going, she had dinner in the oven, the children were watching TV, and all of a sudden all the lights went out and it was dark. So she lit some candles and waited for her husband to come home. And when he came in, he was angry. Why are you sitting in the dark? And she said, well, I called the electric company and you didn't pay the electric bill. And he said, yes, I did. Yes, I did. And they had an argument about it. And she's like, well, it's obvious you didn't. Here we are in the dark. And he screams at her and says, are you truly going to not listen to me and trust your own eyes?
That's classic.
I'm like, that's actually a gaslighting movie, right?
Yeah.
Long time ago, but yeah. So those are just a couple.
Let's talk a little bit about gaslighting and how it relates to the cast of characters we might see out in the world. So if we're not talking about a narcissistic family, there certainly are a lot of narcissistic people who are attracted to politics, for example, and we are not going to name names and we're not even going to talk politics. But gaslighting is a very, very powerful technique of these characters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
So how can we manage, like, to not always believe everything we think, see, or hear when it comes to what's out there in the world, when we're dealing with narcissists who are in power.
Yeah, that's a complicated thing for everyone to have to deal with, right?
Yeah, but it's out there. It's real.
It's out there. It's real. And I think verifying facts is extremely important because people have a tendency these days to have kind of a short attention span. And, you know, they might hear something and then think it's true. And they don't actually follow up and look at the facts and, well, what really happened in this situation.
And if we hear enough of something multiple times, we tend to take it in as truth, mm-hmm. regardless if it is or it isn't. And that is part of narcissistic behavior. What do you mean? Of course I did that.
Right.
I did what you asked me, you know?
And it creates the feeling that adult children grow up with. Am I crazy? Am I the crazy one?
Yeah.
Is there something
the doubt
to me, like in that what I call crippling self-doubt, you know, that adult children of narcissists grow up with because of that?
Would you say that part of what feeds the narcissist is the underlying, well, we know it's low self-esteem and low self-worth, but that the bully becomes louder and bolder in their behavior. And then if they're called out on it, they become the victim.
Yes. And also there's something called the narcissistic injury, that when the narcissist becomes confronted, feels they're going to lose something, feels they're going to be abandoned, or you're not going to believe them or like them anymore, they get what's called the narcissistic injury, and that's when they turn to revenge and, you know, really mean, ugly behavior, which that's why some of these divorces from a narcissist are just so painful and awful, you know, particularly when there are children involved.
It's a very complicated subject, one that I think we need to keep talking about because there are enough of them out in the world. And like you said, it knows no generational boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Before we go, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the patient that you have, the client that you have who's in their 80s, because I find the fact that they want to do this work at that point in their lives so commendable and so brave.
Yeah. Now, you know, she's been a client for a while, but just believing, you know, hanging on to hope and wanting to just maintain her recovery and making sure that, you know, she's really taking good care of herself psychologically and emotionally. And yes, I highly commend her work as a client and her desire to, you know, just want to be as healthy as she can. And her reasons are for my grandchildren.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I mean, for herself too.
Yes. But to be a model of good behavior, of good mental and soulful health.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love your work. I have read your books. I will be reading this one as well. I've just dived into it. We're talking today with Dr. Carol McBride. You can learn more about Dr. McBride's work at willieverbegoodenough.com. You can find her on Twitter at Carol McBride and on Facebook as well as Instagram at Dr. Carol McBride. And Carol is with a K, K-A-R-Y-L. Dr. McBride, as always, thank you for taking part of your day and sharing your incredible wisdom with me and our listeners on this very important topic.
Thanks again for having me, Lisa. I've enjoyed it.
Pleasure. Thanks for joining us on Harvesting Happiness today. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen on behalf of my guest, Dr. Carol McBride, wishing you kind thoughts, kinder words, and the kindest of actions. Until next time, remember, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is your inside job. Please go out and rock your day and remember to be kind to one another. Want to take a deeper dive into sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. Keep harvesting your own happiness anytime, anywhere, from the comfort of wherever you are. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. Harvesting Happiness and More Mental Fitness are produced by me, Lisa Cypress-Kamen, Andrea Mengele, Robin Boyd, Andrea Daly, and the awesome team at Podfly Productions, including Eric Begay, Kimberly Beck, and Alec Guess, in collaboration with TogiNet Radio, KBUU, RadioMalibu.net, and is available on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.